Hej kära lyssnare och varmt välkommen till Väg 74, en podcast om mjukvaruutveckling. Och jag säger också hej Tobbe.
Hej Ola.
Det här är ett litet speciellt avsnitt.
Ja.
Vi kommer alldeles strax att byta till engelska nämligen.
Ja.
För att i studion här, vi är i Atlanta fortfarande och vi spelar in det här från Agile 2016. Då har vi lyckats få Victor Hugo här på konferensen att vara med på en intervju.
Mm.
Och vi kommer prata lite grann om hans företag. Vi tycker att det är lite spännande företag. Han bedriver en mjukvaru outsourcing firma i Brasilien nämligen.
Okej.
Okay. Så att vi hoppar rakt in i intervjun. Vi skippar inzoomningen och vi kommer skippa kortkommandot. För det här blir lite special.
Mm.
Så haka på här nu då. Hello, Victor.
Tack för att jag var med.
Ah, yeah, that was great, right?
That was great. Yeah, yeah. Kind of.
So, Victor, that was your first words in Swedish, basically.
My first words in Swedish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was amazing. No, we learned some Swedish last night, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we learned. Yeah, after maybe 10 beers.
Yes. So we were out having dinner and I think you or someone else asked, so what do you say if it's really good dinner, like a proper Swedish saying, can you something very Swedish? And I said, dra mig baklänges på en liten kärra, den här middagen var grym. Tried to teach Victor that yesterday.
Yeah, that was hard.
Yeah,
I don't even know what that means. And I think you're just playing me on that one.
Yes. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. So I'm Victor Hugo. I'm a Brazilian, now living in Brazil, and I'm co-founder of a company called Lambda Tree. I also work as one of the board members with Ola at the Agile Alliance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when did you sort of decide that you wanted to start your own company?
So this is the thing. I've been working in a lot of companies, and most of the companies that I've ever worked, they all went bankrupt. Right. So I have some sort
you
of
came experience. And they went
back. Oh yeah. So one of the things that happened in all of those companies was I started working as a developer and then a release engineer. Suddenly became an agile coach. Been working as an agile coach since 2004 or something. Mm-hmm. And but in Brazil, and I was living in the south of Brazil, which is kind of a super conservative place. It was really hard for me to continue that work and that conversation about organizational change and everything. So I decided to, I know, and I've been always kind of struggled with hierarchies and not being able to work in the things that I wanted to work inside of a company. Then I decided to spend some years in Europe and then came back to Brazil to open my own company. So we're running, we're a small 60-ish size person. And we do mostly outsourcing, consulting within the Brazilian market. So this was in 2010, right? Mm-hmm. when we opened the company. We started as four partners.
Yep.
And then two of those left the company, and we brought other two that at the time were they were employees in a company to become partners with us.
Okay.
So, in these last 6 years, we grew to 60 people.
Right. So you wanted to start your own company because you wanted to
I was tired of working as an agile coach or a consultant for other companies. And I wanted to see what would happen if I tried to create my own company with the ideas and the values that I mm-hmm. thought were the best for running a company. So imagine you being working. It was usually some the conversations that I had at the time was something like, oh, so you're saying that the teams have to have autonomy and they have to do tests and everything, but I doubt you, if you have your own company, you'd let people do that.
Right.
And I was like, oh, hell yeah. So I'm going to open my company just to actually to see if that is possible or not possible.
Right. Yeah. So you walk the walk.
I walk the walk.
Not only talk the talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So would you say that you had you took the Agile Manifesto as a start, the values there, or what did you start with? What was your vision in terms of values?
I think the Agile Manifesto is just a starting point for software development teams, because it started in the context of software development, and so but we're not kind of a talking that much there about self-organizing companies. We're not talking up there about how we run businesses. So
no.
It was definitely a start for me, and but I had to go look into different places and different authors to see what they had to offer. But definitely the idea that now we have self-organizing teams in a company. What happened if we grew those teams to the context of the whole department?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened if we grew those departments in the context of the whole company? And that led me into going into studying organizational design and stuff like that, just to in order to improve my vision. And but what I personally wanted to do, it was I wanted to do something different than that all the environments that I used to work.
Yeah.
So there was I worked in multinationals and in construction companies in IT departments for construction companies. Those are not like the best places for you to have
no.
a proper quality of life in working in IT. And so I just wanted to run away from that. Mm. And the idea when we opened the company, me and the other co-founder who's is still with us, Giovanni, was, so we are creating this company. We're going to have the same problems as any other company. Like, you have cash flow problems. You have hiring problems, firing problems,
yes.
Commercial, sales, everything. But we'll try to bring different ideas and different solutions for those same problems. That was sort of how we intended to create the company. The other two partners that I have in this company right now, they are so amazing, because they just tagged along and came with us without much of concern that would be some sort of a crazy idea.
Okay, so right. they sort of came also from a more traditional.
We all worked as independent consultants doing organization transforming organizations, mm-hmm. or working in like big multinational companies. So we all kind of knew what it is for you to work in a place where you have to ask permission to buy a pen.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
kind of we know that we didn't want to have that, so that's why we created the company, that was one of the conversations that we had.
You wanted to get away from that.
I wanted to get away from that.
So you bought a lot of pens.
Now I can get my own pens.
So you said something about sales there. How do you do your sales? Do you have a...
So in a company, we organized around roles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I used to be one of the architects and developers in the company, but we had so much problem with selling agile in paper projects that we decided to, there was a time actually for me to step into the say kind of sales department to be the front line into offering agile projects to other companies. So but we don't do, you know, that the cold calling clients,
right.
to sell projects. Usually they come to us. We have a few business partners,
mm-hmm.
that would offer their clients are looking for someone that can build a mobile app or a web app or
right.
whatever. And then we just start this conversation about, maybe doing some work for them. So I'm not the one in charge of the sales department. There's no such a thing.
No.
So what happens is that I'm one of the other five commercial people.
Okay.
Right. So we basically we all deal with the process of having all of the contacts with clients and valuing proposals and dealing with contracts and everything. So we kind of everyone does this job. So in one of my functions now, I work as a normal commercial person.
Right.
You know. So there is no we are five, and there is no supervision between what we are doing. It is kind of the same thing happens with all of the other teams in the company. So we have consulting teams, we have development teams, we have the whole administration. We have like 2-3 people in the administration mm-hmm. area for the company, and there's no supervision.
So you organize yourselves in sort of cells.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. We are all. I mean, in that regard, we're not maybe not that disruptive,
right?
In a sense that I just changed the name of everything and now people work in sales. No, it's for us. It's almost like it has the same name as a normal department,
mm-hmm.
but there's no such a thing as that department reports to a bigger right. hierarchical position. So we are in a sense we are kind of a autonomous cell
yeah.
that works, and who we answer to, it's usually the development team, the consulting team, the administration team, so the whole company,
yeah.
right? Because our work in that particular part of the company actually affects most of the other companies. So we are, I prefer to say that we're more into a network than a right. like specific sales.
Yeah, so you don't have the hierarchy. You sort of synchronize between the teams or the groups.
Yeah, so yeah. We, even in one of our values in a company is we don't have formal hierarchy, and we believe that there are better ways to solve the company's problems.
Yeah.
So what that means is just whatever we come across a problem, we're not gonna say that putting a manager is a way to solve that problem, right? It might be the case that we need someone with a specific set of skills, but there is no one to be monitoring or controlling no. other people in what they have to do. So, and I guess one of the most of the these new ideas of network-oriented companies, they kind of go into this direction that you need people organized based on commitments or based on roles or based mm-hmm. on sales. And so this is kind of the idea that we brought to the company.
I see a lot of similarities with how Agicle is run, the company that I work for. And one interesting thing when we started was budgets. How do you or do not use?
This is an ongoing conversation mm-hmm. every time, right? Now with because we grew from last year to 30 something, almost 40 people to almost to 60 people now,
yeah.
and. We had to hire someone with a really a lot of knowledge of financial management.
Yeah.
Because the company was growing, there was no more like so this is me. I don't have any sort of a formal education on financial
right.
management. So I got we had to bring someone in, and budgeting is something that almost every company do.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of don't have it. But in a way, what we have in a company is more into restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Restrictions means something like, let's say you're doing mobile development and you need to buy a new iPhone for you to test. There's no such of a, there's not a bucket where you just get that money from,
right.
and that bucket can just get empty after a while. It's more into more in a continuous planning of this mm-hmm. expense, right? So if someone wants to buy an iPhone, they first of all they know if their project is running properly that they can spend money. How do they know that? They know how much the company is making in that project. Mm-hmm. They know, so they know the hour rate that we charging the clients. They know their salaries, right? Yep. So they can make that calculation, mm-hmm. and say, oh, we do have space for buying an iPhone. So I guess before, right. I think we need that. And then it depends. It depends a lot on how people, how long they've been in the company. If they're pretty new to the company, they believe that they have to ask permission for me, mm-hmm. to buy such a thing. If after a while they start kind of getting what we do there, so they usually do the whole search for prices and bring to the financial person to have a conversation. So look, we need this to be bought. How you prefer us to do this? Should I buy my own credit card and reimburse, or do you might have a supplier that you already have a contract? Right, so there's a lot of questioning. So it's not asking; it's much less asking for permission, much more consulting to someone who might have more information than you. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the ways that happened. There's another thing that usually, and for that I'm talking about like big expenses. So when I want to buy a new computer, I want to buy maybe a new iPad, and you spend a lot of money. But like for small things, like the materials that you use, like post-its and pens and whatever like that, there's not even a talk about it. It's just buy it, and we have a reimbursement website that we created for you to just put in there these expenses, and you'll be reimbursed.
Right. So you go out and buy some stuff, and then you get reimbursed for it.
Yeah.
And you treat people like adults.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe in Sweden that's more common.
Yeah.
But there in Brazil, that is actually a revolutionary thing that someone in a company might be an adult.
Yeah. Right.
So they can they can go to a bank. Ask for like $200,000 to buy his new house, but they can't go and buy a book because he wants to improve their knowledge. They can't go and buy a pen. You got that? I'm kind of a I don't like this idea of like asking for buying a pen.
No.
So that's why it's my only sort of example here. But like, so this is actually not common in Brazil, not at all. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about paper and pens, like post-its and pens.
Actually, I don't think it's quite common in Sweden either.
I don't think so. It's
very similar to how Agile works.
Yeah.
But
you sort of learn or ask, so is it okay to buy this? Yes. So the next time you know that, okay, I can spend I can spend 15,000 or whatever. And after a while, people figure out that, as you said, they know how much money is rolling in.
Yeah.
And they know the salary.
It's easy to do the math, right?
It's very easy to do the math, and so we don't have a budget either in that
sense. But like now, of course, we might have some conversations about budgeting things,
right.
Like what should we invest, mm-hmm. For this new conference that's coming in. So we don't have like annual budgeting, but let's say that we wanted to go to Agile conference, mm-hmm. and I want to know how much I can spend at the conference, because we're sponsoring, or we're putting a booth in there, we need some swags to give away. There is a conversation about, look, if we're going to this conference, please maintain the expenses into this range.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I guess it's just, you know, it's having small boundaries where people can actually decide whatever they want
to
do.
You have to have that.
Yeah, you gotta have that.
It's about clarity, and so we're clear. This is how much you can spend.
Yeah.
And for bigger things, come ask.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess. Maybe not every family, but like most of families has the same thing, right? You only spend I don't know, buy maybe a new car or buy a new house.
You discuss it up front.
Yeah, you discuss it up front. It is the same thing.
So how does things work with hiring and salaries?
So hiring is a sort of an open process. Mm-hmm. So we have we don't have HR in the company.
No.
Everything is run by volunteers.
Yeah.
So we have a committee. So right. People that are quite interested into hiring and doing interviews and everything, they kind of self-organized in a way that, imagine that I'm working in the commercial department and we just closed the deal. There has this project that wants to needs to start, and from what we've been talking to people, we need to hire two more developers, mm-hmm. right? So this group, we have a Slack channel for the hiring, and we just go to them and say, look, this is the project that we just saw, that we just closed the deal. We believe that we need two more developers. Help us out.
Okay.
So we have a conversation about what happened, and if the need is actually confirmed because of that, they go in and they basically run the hiring process. The hiring process will start with someone sending their CV, and then they collectively decide if they're gonna go ahead and call the person to come to the company. And everyone that participates in that interview actually has a final vote into hiring or not hiring that person. Mm-hmm. And the person, if it's a developer, he comes to the company and codes with us for around 2 hours. We're gonna see it impaired into solving a software problem, mm-hmm. or anything like that. And that's basically it. It's not complex, actually. No. It's super easy, so. And it has to be done by the people that is gonna be working with that person.
Yeah. So they're sort of self-selecting.
Oh yeah, so imagine, so the team is, interviewing someone, and the person going to some, I don't know, some sexist joke, mm-hmm. right? Or whatever kind of joke that was inappropriate. And imagine how the team would react to that person being the team working with them,
right.
if they haven't had the opportunity to know that person and spend a few hours, a couple hours with them.
Yeah.
And at that moment, the team usually will say, we don't want that person.
Right.
And there's so much problem if I personally would go and said, nope, I want him.
Right.
I want him
because
he's my friend and I want him. Actually, we had that in the past. We had some sort of the same approach in the past and right at the beginning. And these cases were the only cases where we had huge problems with hiring. When we hadn't went through the whole interviewing, then in the second phase of that interview, we bring that person to talk to the team that they probably be working on.
Right.
If you don't do that, usually there is a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, if you run into trouble down the road, you're going to work so much harder to make it work if you are in charge of the process yourself.
If it's your decision, you actually we want that decision to yield a good result.
Yeah. So you're very, what I hear is that you're very transparent about how you run your business.
So every all the numbers are available to everyone who asks.
Yeah.
So everyone knows everyone's salary.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something that we have on a wall,
no.
you know, like printed on a wall. But everyone can participate, for instance, everyone can participate in the hiring process. But to participate in the hiring process, of course, you have to know each people's salary because you'll be discussing with everyone. Mm-hmm. So what this is, it's a big taboo in Brazil.
To talk about salary?
To talk about salary. Yeah. Especially because we are big into command and control cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Salary is a really way for you to impose power and to make politics and and this is actually that's why you don't talk about it. Imagine that you came up with an agreement with your manager because you guys are like brothers and your friends and everything. You go out on the pub, but you don't actually perform properly.
Okay.
And you're making, you know, 40% more than everyone on a team. If that information comes out, of course you're gonna have a problem.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because everyone will be like, what?
This guy, really?
Really? Him? Mm-hmm. So we try to remove that by bringing all the salaries to everyone who wants to know that,
mm-hmm.
right? And but not only that, we have we usually do a meeting with, we call it town hall meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So
town hall?
Town hall,
yeah.
Town hall, yeah. Where we present all of the numbers of the company to everyone. It's also available if you wanna, if you ask for it.
Yeah.
But let's be real. No one wants to look into bank accounts and trying to come up to see if the expenses and the debts are okay. We don't do that.
I think you basically want to know that there is money in the bank.
If there's no money in the bank,
you want to know that as well.
What's the size of the debt?
Exactly.
If there's debt, what are the plans of paying it?
Mm.
How the company is performing? That actually brings security to people, I believe.
Yeah.
One of the things that we do is actually the whole company has an amount of money per month to decide to do whatever they want with that money.
Okay.
So why it is a specific amount of money, I don't know. Because we decided to, I believe people in a company, they are in the right position to decide if we are, buying a new video game or getting a barbecue, that mm-hmm. or buying more art to the office, or maybe putting some stickers on, something like that. And what we thought of was, why don't we reserve a certain amount of money, let's say $2,000 per month, for everyone to discuss how they're going to spend this money. So traditionally, there is an HR responsibility to do.
Yep.
There's HR, there's also like someone in charge of the culture of the company, they will spend that money. So instead of doing that, what we're doing is just inviting everyone to a conversation about, so here's money. You want to spend all that in MMs? Great. You want to buy the newest awesome video game that just came out? Great. But it's your decision,
right?
So we have to self-organize to decide what to do in the company.
Yeah.
For that particular situation, the founders decided to step out, not participate in the discussion.
Yeah.
And that was for a simple thing is that because we have so many new people in the company, people might think that if I give an opinion,
that's the
owner giving an opinion. So
that's why you step back.
Yeah, that's why I step back.
Okay.
I don't want to anchor.
No, right.
People based on my opinion. So I decided to I'm not participating into it, and we all not participating into it.
That's interesting. And I guess from hearing what you're saying about your company, that you pretty much can decide where you work and when you work.
There is. We are pretty flexible into this. Of course, it depends on. We usually say that if you're working on a project, and we're doing outsourcing mostly, so some of the projects might have restrictions based on the client's option of work,
mm-hmm.
right? So we do maintaining. So like the sustaining, right? I think is the right term. Sustaining of one of a few production applications,
right?
This is and we work for a bank, so it's okay for you if you want to work like later in the night. But this is a bank running an operation like a normal mm-hmm. 9-to-5 operation.
Right.
Of course, there has to be someone available if something wrong comes up.
Yeah.
So that discussion happens within the context of the team.
And also the client, I guess.
And also the client, of course. So usually we have we have some common conversations in the company. And the first one is that imagine that there is a holiday on a Thursday,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and you want to take a long holiday. You want
extended weekend.
Extended weekend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So people would actually come to me and say, "Look, Victor, I was wondering, can I not work on Friday and take the whole weekend off?" And usually my answer is always the same. It is, I don't know, do you? Because you need to know if that's okay with your client and if your project is actually in a position where you can do that. Mm. And you have to talk to your team, because maybe your team wants to work that Friday in order to get another, I don't know, more special holiday, and they are actually doing that,
yeah.
Right? So this conversation happens a lot, and the answer is always the same, right? Because I don't know if that person can or cannot go to extended weekend. It's just,
yeah. Because you have one office in Sao Paulo, or is it more offices?
There's an interesting story in there. We used to have two offices, mm-hmm. one in Sao Paulo, one in Rio. We tried a management style called laissez-faire,
yeah,
which is basically leave them be. They do whatever they want, and then we'll hope for the best, mm-hmm. right? So there was no proper alignment of objectives and values. There was no like continuous conversation about improving and maintaining the culture of the company. We didn't have that.
No,
we didn't have that. And what happened after a while was that we suddenly realized that those were two different companies.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
That the other office had a particular culture, a particular set of behaviors that we, as a group, didn't like it, right? So that was it became a much more toxic environment.
Okay.
But you know, not that this was actually our fault or their fault to be in that position. I guess it's just the whole context made that possible. So we came together as a group and did a big retrospective about this and decided to close the office.
Okay, so how did you open up the office? How did you?
We had a client in Rio that wanted us to be there close to him.
And then you hired people from Rio, or
I hired people from Rio, and no one wanted to move to Rio, so
okay,
we didn't have that much of a sort of exchange of mm-hmm. cultural exchange between the two places. So this is one of the things actually we learned from that is that. If we would be open another office in somewhere, whatever place it is, that we will need someone to move into that area, or at least stay in there
or
for
have
a while.
Rotation.
Oh yeah, or have a rotation. Yeah, that would be great.
So the values of the company can sort of
maintain themselves.
So cross pollinate.
Cross pollinate. Yeah. So now with 60 people, our main concern is. How can we continue those values?
Right.
So before, when we were like 30 something at that point, it was right at the beginning of the company. Now we're more mature as a company.
Mm-hmm. And bigger.
And bigger, yeah. But we still have that problem of how can we maintain culture?
Yeah.
I guess this is every company's problem. And how we're doing that, we're running experiments into how to do that.
Okay.
So experiments like we have this regular conversation. We call it brown bags.
Okay. Yeah. Sit down over some food and discuss.
Yeah, yeah. So we usually buy food for everyone to stay there during lunchtime to have all sorts of conversations. Those conversations can be technical conversations, can be cultural conversations, can be subjects like sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the ways that we want to maintain the whole culture of the company active, right? And people can submit a brown bag for whatever subject that they are interested in. Usually that happens once a week, but we are in a point right now where they are mostly happening twice a week.
Yeah.
So we don't know yet if that is the best format, because I mean.
It sounds like a good idea to sit down and discuss your values and the culture, because I think that is what saying out loud what you value and how you want to do practice stuff that will sort of externalize what you have in sure. your head maybe, and when you share it, it becomes part of the culture.
Yeah, sure.
So I think, well, yeah, it's natural that if you have grown from 30 to 60, you probably want
things
to do
they
will change, and you want to do the brown bags more often.
And one of the things that we also do is that because we don't have an HR department, mm-hmm. Once we don't, we had a problem with how can you do the. Well, the welcoming of someone to the company. So usually there's no PowerPoint for that, right? There's no PowerPoint. No, we call the CEO to do a PowerPoint presentation for everyone, and so that they are trained in the company's culture. Instead, we do a thing called it's almost like shadowing, but we call like Godfather, Modfather, mm-hmm. right? So why that? Of course, because of the movie, The Godfather, is that once you have a problem, you have someone to go to that will help you through doubts or problems or whatever. So that it usually works like this. So once we have the confirmation that the person will be hired, we have a group of volunteers that they come up to say, I would like to be Godfather or godmother for this person.
Yeah.
And that person is responsible for showing this new employee how things happened in the company.
Sort of they take care of the onboarding experience.
The onboarding, yeah.
Yeah.
So there are a few parts of the onboarding. There's all the bureaucratic part. There's an administrative task. But there's the cultural part of onboarding, that someone that sits with you, talks to you about values, talks to you about we have some sort of a week with some stories and what we do as a company. So the idea is that person becomes a reference to the new employee. So if he has a question like, should I do an extended weekend? They kind of know that person is there for them to ask questions.
Right.
So this is one way to do a more decentralized onboarding experience.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a beautiful way, though.
Yeah, but like in the same way, of course, because we are decentralized, there are not only good stories about this. Of course, there'll be maybe someone there's not doesn't do a good job into the onboarding. Mm-hmm. Right. So we are kind of in continuous learning into this to see if that is actually, if it is worth the whole thing or not. There's this idea that every employee just wants to take advantage of the work that he's mm-hmm. doing.
Yeah.
He's lazy, doesn't do anything.
Right.
And there's another idea that I think is Douglas McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other idea is that people actually want to do a good job.
Right.
They want to be the best person they can possibly be. So, and what brings these two different set of behaviors is the context that you create within the system that you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
So for a company, if you create a company that expects or believes that the people is lazy, of course you're gonna go into all sets of gate stage decision points, hierarchies, defensive. You're definitely not gonna trust anyone because they're all lazy, you don't wanna do anything.
They're gonna spend money like drunken sailors.
Yeah. So what I personally wanted to create is how can I create a context that trust is a value, and people can be whoever they are when they are in the company. So I guess this is one of the things that I personally believe a lot, is that we cannot have this type of company, this type of context, if there is fear for people not being who they are. There's no tolerance or an acceptance of differences. So because of that, personally for me, diversity is a big thing that we discuss.
Mm-hmm.
For people to actually experience a constructive, tolerant environment, right?
Right.
It is hard to kind of build that up, but it is one of the underlying values and visions that I personally have for this company. So we try to I personally believe that they're like amazing people coming out shapes and forms.
Yep.
And I want to have amazing people work for me. So if I'm if I have an environment that don't allow someone to be the best that they can possibly be, there is a problem. So yes. We have to act into this. So yeah. That's why we have lots of conversation about diversity, trying to create a more diverse sort of a company. And that in itself is a big challenge and a kind of a disruptive into how most of the companies in Brazil work.
Yeah.
So this is, so I just wanted to point that out because this is one of the things that I'm quite passionate about. And I believe that it is maybe one of the things that I'm most focusing on at the moment.
Yeah. So do you get a lot of, do you have to explain why you do stuff the way you do, why you run your company, or has it come to that point that when people hear about your company as a developer or as a UX person, they want to start with you, do they know about the culture already?
We have a big community presence in Brazil, so we mostly, we talk in almost every technical conference in there. People are really passionate about technology, so we are usually talking about our company.
Mm-hmm.
We have this kind of a famous blog that we usually write about the way that we work.
Mm-hmm.
We have a polemic name for it. We call it organizational democracy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the beginning, it was mostly to sort of raise the awareness that there is those crazy guys trying to do something different in the world. But now it's just an idea that we are creating a high collaborative place.
Yes.
Right.
Sounds like it.
In the this is a possible option for companies. You don't have to follow all of the scientific management rules from the past. You can actually do things differently. And I guess this is one of the key points of this. I personally believe that every entrepreneur, every manager needs to know that there are more options.
Yeah.
And you know, what I'm doing, of course, is not the only way to run a company. Of course, it might not be the best, most adventurous and hipster sort of doing things, but it is a valid option, and
yeah,
this has to be said. There is a problem when I try to explain, like, to my uncles and aunties what
yeah.
I do, because
yeah.
usually, like, what do you mean people work, arrive when they want and
yeah.
leave when they want the company? I said, yeah, and there's no manager. What do you mean there's no managers? No.
Who's holding the whip?
Who's holding yeah, this is the thing. I mean, you don't tell them what to do? No, they already know. What do you mean? What if someone just go and buy a car with the company's credit card? But well, we just we'll figure it out if that yeah. happens. But now that has never happened.
No, it hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I also subscribe to the idea that you should trust the people that you're working with. I mean, anything else would be sort of, it would be
disruptive.
Yeah, and it's
at least
you hire someone because they have a skill set, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you want to make them get the most out of it. So and in that case, the only thing you can do is, the thing that you should do is focus on creating an environment where people can work,
yeah,
and have fun. I think having fun is really important as well.
One of the things that we actually I think we forgot to talk about is that once you're working on a project, it doesn't matter your experience, you are having direct contact with clients,
yeah,
and
yeah.
that changes a lot how you as a professional grows, because suddenly you're used to having someone telling you what the client said, and now if you made a decision that wasn't the best decision, you have to defend that in front of the client.
Mm.
So you started to be more aware and concerned about your own work,
yeah.
right? And I call that fire-driven development.
Yeah.
So just throwing people on fire yeah. just to see how they behave. What I saw is that We're usually looking for how can we get someone like pretty junior into a more senior position
mm.
that accelerates this this process. Of course, there has to be a safe net for we're not jeopardizing our clients' businesses. We're not, you know, making them do crazy, stupid decisions. No, it's more into you need to take responsibility of your own actions and your own decisions. So to me, this whole thing is about having the autonomy to decide on what you going to do and to decide what is the best for you. Mm. Having the information necessary to make the best decisions, and that means transparency, that means clarity. Having the resources to do whatever you are meant to do, mm-hmm. and be accountable of the decisions that you're taking. So those four sort of variables is what, I don't know, maybe people call empowerment. And to me, that's how we try to create that. Mm.
So if people want to know more about your company, they
we'll translate website.
Okay. Yeah.
But like we are kind of starting talking these things about in English. Probably you'll be hearing more about this in English on the website.
Yeah.
The website is blog.lambda3.com.br.
So we will include that in the show notes. And if people want to contact you directly, can they do that?
No, sure, absolutely. Please feel free to talk. I'm personally in a journey into helping people realize that there are other options.
Yes.
So that's what I did. It's just a simple question,
right? So should people use an email or
you can find me on Twitter, and then we go. I mean, and then on Twitter we can discuss, and then I'll give an email and everything.
And your Twitter handle is
@VictorHG.
HG.
HGD. Okay. Hugo.
We will also include that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yes. So thank you very much, Victor, for sitting down with us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, that was amazing.
I appreciate you a lot for this.
Okay. That's amazing. Thank you for inviting me. And I'm probably going to practice my Swedish better for the next one.
Yep. So thanks so much, everyone, for listening.
Should we mention our Twitter handles as well?
Yes, we should. Mine is @Eldnestam.
And mine is @Tobbe Anderberg.
Yes. So feel free to contact us if you want. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.